I've heard it's great.
I want to go see it. I haven't
seen
it.
No. From the one that... The meme Transformer that just came out called The Imploder.
No.
What do you think its vehicle form is?
A submarine. I was reading something today about how... here's an example of our current public education system. People are saying... trying to figure out how come the Titanic didn't implode.
Why? Oh, you know,
because it wasn't. It's not a capsule.
Full of air.
Yeah. Kind of filled up with water and balanced itself up.
The more the stuff comes out about that, it's just more and more horrifying. It's like a previous venture, like a previous trip. They couldn't get it to come up, so they all had to like.
Hold their breath?
No, they had to, like, throw their weight around to shake the capsule so it would shake off a weight that wouldn't come detached.
It was just waiting to happen.
I mean, there's safety standards. Like, you understand that, like, most airplanes have all kinds of problems, and there's only certain ones that actually get the red flag.
Right.
But on one of those, like, it's just absolutely... absolutely freaking horrifying.
Well, you got to realize the number of trips they did. I can promise you that they never did any kind of pre-job checks or analysis to check the integrity of the thing. They probably just always assumed, hey, it's going to be good again.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be an issue. Instead of like making sure that it was actually still going to fucking work. I mean, you know, there's stuff offshore that we, every time we get on a job, we used to check it. There was a series of tests you did every time on the exact same thing. You know, every time you went to use it, to make sure that it was still working and the integrity hadn't gone down. And occasionally, it would fail.
Uh-huh.
And you'd catch something before something bad would happen. And I can promise you, they weren't doing any kind of pressure test or anything on that damn sub. Which they should have been doing every time.
Well, everybody, welcome to episode 181 of Scary Dad Podcast. Coming to you today from the back office of the house full of collectibles. I'm setting up to be at next week's or this weekend's actually. The show that just happened yesterday, actually. I'm setting up to do a show that happened in the past. So, but yeah, so last week we had a pretty tense episode talking about Horror at Sea, Lost at Sea, and that the Titan capsule that. I mean, it's pretty shitty that, like, they pretty much knew what happened to it. Like, everybody, the news just kind of strung everybody along.
Yeah.
Even James Cameron was like, look, man, if communications, the backup systems, the power, everything goes out all at once...
It was catastrophic.
Implosion. It didn't
if
just...
If you didn't hear people yelling in the microphone asking for help, something really bad happened.
Yeah. And they just kind of strung everybody along. But like I said, in last week's episode, we were like, hey, by the time this episode comes out, you'll know. So by the time you were hearing us talk about it, the fate of the submarine was known. But just a follow-up from last week, yeah. Squished like a beer can. And they're like landed kind of close to Titanic, too.
It crushed like a beer can and then exploded.
Yeah, of course.
There's pieces everywhere. And I mean, like those initial pictures they showed, dude, I swear to God, I thought I saw a boot. You know, it was pretty intense, you know?
The plus size is they say that it all happened within about 1/30,000th of a second. So if the people on the sub actually knew that there was a problem, when the problem came to fruition, they didn't suffer much. Mm-hmm. That all happened so fast that, I don't know, it's one of those crazy things. I've never been one to really dwell on death or dying. Obviously, this is a horror podcast, so, you know, you think about, like, you know, your slasher kills and, whoa, that's gnarly.
Right.
But I've never been one to just sit there and, like, ponder life and death and, you know. But there are certain things that you're like, man, I would, like, what a horrible way to go. Like, falling out of an airplane with no parachute and knowing that you had, you know, a minute of free fall before you smacked.
Right.
Like, that would suck.
Yeah.
You know, getting set on fire. That would not be fun. At least this, like, was so quick that it's, like, even if they knew someone was like, uh-oh, Houston, we have a problem, but the problem was, like, instantaneous, like, less than a heartbeat. So, hopefully they didn't suffer too badly. Or weren't too scared for too long.
Right.
But anyway, I guess we do have some catching up, because we keep, our whole summer series so far has been about the ocean.
Yeah.
And they just, you know, the video came out a couple of days ago, and it's a big deal. Like, dude got grabbed by the hand by a bull shark and pulled out of his boat.
Just rinsing his hands off.
In the Florida Everglades, like, rinsing his hands off. There's freaking bull sharks. There's sharks in the fresh water out there. Which, you know, the Everglades are brackish. They're a mixture of salt and fresh, depending on where you are.
Right.
But still.
But even, you know, not to be worried about a shark, you should have at least been concerned about a gator. I mean, there's no reason to put your hands in the water twice.
Yeah.
Because he did it once, and his friend said, don't do that, dude. And he goes, ah, it's fine.
Yeah.
Then the second time, got him.
Well, and then there was a video that just popped up of this. There's a fishing charter, and they're out in the ocean somewhere, and a freaking great white shark just jumps out of the water and onto the front of the boat. And it's a big ass shark too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's no joke. But the dude's filming, like, he's like a charter fisherman or whatever, and he's filming people fishing, and this great white, just like this flash of light, just jumps up out of the water and lands on the boat, and then of course just starts thrashing around. The dude's like, oh crap, now I've got like this 13-foot great white sitting on my bow that I need to to get off of here somewhere somehow. So anyway, we're gonna switch gears, even though today's episode is still damn topical. It's like when we were doing the old business and new business and stuff in the past, our episodes rarely actually lined up with current events. But
yeah,
today we're talking about the monster that is Russia. So welcome to episode 181. Mr. Gomez, if you please.
First, the old business.
All right. In this date in history, I decided to go 35 years back. I tried to go 25, but that was 1988. Or 1998. There really wasn't a whole lot of good to be seen in 1998. 1998 kind of sucked. But 1988. All right. Top in music. Dirty Diana by Michael Jackson. That's whenever he was getting kind of edgy.
He was trying to.
People out.
He was trying to sharpen his edges and, you know, prove that he was more masculine than people were giving him credit for.
So, I don't know. I don't think I've mentioned this on the show. If I have, let me know. But it's still a cool story. So, I read this book recently. It was called Nothing But a Good Time. And it was interview style stories about the hair metal scene coming up out of L.A. in the early 80s, starting kind of dovetailing off big bands like Judas Priest and, you know, Iron Maiden, but then coalescing, you know, starting kicking off with Motley Crue in L.A., and then everybody copycatting them. Well, we remember those times, and there were bands in there that we all liked, whether we want to admit it or not. But there was some good stuff in the hair metal world that broke through. But one thing that was really, really bizarre that I just was like, I think the guitar player for Warrant, which Warrant is known as like one of the last bands standing, like one of the ones that really took a fall whenever Nirvana came out in the 90s, because they were just really starting to hit. They had a couple hits on the radio and were doing all right when that entire scene was overthrown. So Warrant and Winger are kind of thought of as like the face of the stupidity of hair metal, but
mm-hmm.
But Warrant was there from the beginning. Like, they were a cover band on the L.A. strip scene early on when all the other bands were getting famous, and they were with them. They just got famous later. But they were making videos, and they had a costume designer. And so this guitar player was like, hey, we have, you know, we have a somebody wants to have a meeting with you and discuss some things. And he's like, okay. So he gets in this into this limo, the cinema car. He gets in the car. The car's all blacked out. They drive him. He says, it feels like an hour of just twists and turns and stuff. And they pull into this darkened warehouse area. And he thinks he's, like, getting in trouble. He thinks he's being, like, kidnapped or something. He's like, what the fuck kind of shit is this? And they get out and goes and sits down. And a guy comes in and he's got, like, sunglasses and a hoodie. And he's just completely disguised. And he walks up, takes off his stuff, and it's Michael Jackson. And Michael Jackson pushes play on a video and shows this guy his video, like the Warrant video where they're jumping around on stage. And he's like, where do you get your clothes? Where do you get your costumes? All of your leathers and zippers and stuff. And the guy's like, from this costume designer, you know, up on Melrose or whatever. And Michael starts cutting into, like, all the other people that are there. He's like, see, look at this guy. He's got a guitar. He's jumping up and down. He's kicking. He's rolling around. And his stuff's not falling apart. He's like, I put my stuff on. I dance around. It starts falling apart. I want a meeting with their costume designer or whatever. And anyway, it turned out to be the leather jacket he got designed for the Bad cover.
It's badass, dude.
It was the same guys that did the costumes for Warren, because they came up with this kind of pleather that looked real, but it was also flexible so that they could move. And Michael Jackson was all pissed because he was just home watching MTV and seeing these guys move around in leather outfits that weren't falling apart. He's like, all right, we got to figure out who this guy is. But why all the subterfuge was just hilarious. Okay, so next you would have been hearing Foolish Beat by Debbie Gibson. We need to get Debbie Gibson at one of the shows. She was in, like, Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus. She's done some B-movie horror.
She's done some horror.
Since
wasn't she in Houston last year doing an autograph signing somewhere, like in Sugar Land or something?
I don't know. I was joking. I don't really follow Debbie
Gibson. She wasn't. I had some friends of mine that went to see her and took pictures with her. It was last year or the year before she was in town.
Now, this is a song that I've always liked. It's a little departure for the band, but the song The Flame by Cheap Trick, It's kind of a ballad, but I've always thought it was a cool song. But yeah, if you were listening to the radio back in 1988, those were some of the top songs in movies, and this is why the 80s rule and everything else doesn't. July 3rd, if you wanted to go to the movies, these are just a few of the ones you could pick from. You could go see Coming to America, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Big, with Tom Hanks, Great Outdoors, with John Candy and
Dan Aykroyd. Big Rodeo. I still watch that one.
Crocodile Dundee 2, which some might say was actually superior to the original. Not me, but some might say. Willow, which was a pretty damn good movie. And, again, straight from the topical subject matter, you would have been able to see Red Heat. Which I actually saw that in 1988. I would have been 13 years old. And my uncle took me to see Red Heat with Schwarzenegger and Belushi. And it's a little hard-boiled for a 13-year-old to like really be like, whoa. I enjoyed it. It was badass. But I was like, man, my parents wouldn't let me watch this.
It'd be a hard choice to pick one of those, man. I'd probably just... going with my heart, I'd go with Coming to America, which I know might sound weird, but that's the movie that I enjoy the most out of all those.
I was going to say, but first time.
Right.
Like Willow, you've got a George Lucas, Steven Spielberg collaboration with Val Kilmer in it. Fantasy, you know, that's pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. Not knowing, oh, what are we going to go see? You know, Who Framed Roger Rabbit? That was before computers, so that was all that dual
animation.
Yeah. I mean, it was groundbreaking effects. The Great Outdoors, I did see that in the theater. In fact, I saw most of these in the theater. Big with Tom Hanks. I mean, that's classic.
But I've quoted Coming to America so many times. Like I said, if I was to go with my heart, I would have to go Coming to America. Me and my cousin would quote, we still quote that damn movie to this day. You know, because that was the first one Eddie Murphy did multi-characters. Which he ended up just having just a true talent at.
Eddie Murphy was amazing. Just, I honestly think, and this is hearing other comedians say too, I think Eddie Murphy got derailed in the movie business by trying to go taking off his own hard edge. Whenever he stopped being the cussing, you know, multi-character, right. when he started to go family friendly, he started making some bombs.
Like when it went from Beverly Hills Cop 1 to Beverly Hills Cop 3.
Yeah.
If you look at those two acts of Foley's, those are not the same people at all.
Right.
Because he's a brilliant actor, dude. He honestly is.
Really good.
It's amazing.
Like Boomerang, like stuff that he's done that's serious.
Well, I made Noah and them watch Bowfinger the other day.
Even that one. That's
a good fucking movie, dude. Because he plays two characters in it that are total bipolars of each other. And it's impressive work, man.
Yeah, he's awesome. Yeah, and it's funny because people like Joe Rogan, Jerry Seinfeld, like top names in the comic, they're trying to get him to come back and do stand-up. He just doesn't want to do it.
Well, you ever saw the movie he did, the Rudy Ray Moore biopic he did?
What's that?
The Rudy Ray Moore biopic he did. The mm-hmm. Dolomite biopic on Netflix.
Okay.
Dude, if you ever get a chance to watch that. I grew up watching Dolomite. My mom dated this guy named Joe. And Joe, when I was 12 years old, would put me sitting down watching Rudy Ray Moore tapes at his house, which I shouldn't have been watching at the age of 12 because the guy was just filthy. But that biopic he did on Rudy Ray Moore is fucking amazing, dude. It's one of the funniest movies he's done in a long ass time. But Eddie Murphy is a talent, man.
Yeah, so I don't know. Like I said, whenever I was looking at this list, it'd be like, it's hard. But in retrospect, Coming to America is, that's the, so I told y'all, told you and told the audience on the episode, you know, we made kind of the list of summer movies that are appropriate for the kids and stuff. We were flipping through and Meg was like, Coming to America? And I'm like, yeah, that's kind of on the line there, babe.
Yeah, it's not too bad, though. There's worse ones.
Good morning. Fuck you. Yes.
Yes. Fuck you, too.
So we settled for Tommy Boy.
That's another good one.
The Farley and Spade. And
you can't go wrong with a Farley movie.
No. And then you wonder if the kids are paying attention and stuff like that. And putting Juliet to bed, and she's like, housekeeping. I'm like, hell yeah, dude. All right, and if you were watching TV on this date in 1988, you would have seen The Wonder Years, first season. It was just brand new. Mm-hmm. China Beach, which was an intense show. My parents used to watch that, the Vietnam show. That was like an early version of like freaking Game of Thrones, where they'd kill off main characters just for dramatic effect.
Right.
And just like completely unexpected. You know, you'd have a main character that's just like, he's the star of the show, and then just like, just gets taken out with no fanfare. He just doesn't make it out. And they're like, what happened to Bobby? Didn't make it out, man. Like, oh, shit. Like, they were... Let's see, MacGyver. Used to love MacGyver.
I used to like MacGyver a lot.
What's your favorite MacGyver invention?
Oh, shit.
I was thinking about it the other day. He had so many different things.
I had to think for a while, to be honest with you. I'm not sure.
The one that I liked, it's probably not my favorite one, but it's the one that's the most memorable, is he's getting chased by these guys. There's a girl with him in a car, and he's got like this convertible car, and it's got one of those steering wheel knobs on it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're shooting at him. And he's looking for something to do. The girl's driving, and he's looking. He opens the glove box, and there's a pistol in there. But he doesn't like guns, so he takes the gun and he throws it out of the car. And they get away, and so he gets out of the car, and he pulls off the muffler and some upholstery and, like, takes some gasoline and takes off that...
The knob,
and essentially makes a cannon out of the muffler and, like, fires it, and it shoots into the bad guy's radiator and busts up their engine. And I'm like, so you don't like guns. You made a gun.
You made something worse than a gun. You made a bazooka.
You made a bazooka that also could blow you up. Like, but I was like, I think now, because I'm damn near 50, and I still want a car with a little knob.
I used to drive a forklift when I was younger that had one of those. It's fucking awesome, dude. It is so cool. You can turn so fast, man. I had one on my boat, too, on my pontoon boat back in the day.
All right, so we would have been watching Night Court,
okay.
21 Jump Street, Miami Vice, okay. Golden Girls, Who's the Boss, and Married with Children.
Okay.
Like, two.
I was getting worried there for a second, because like the first three, until you name MacGyver, I hadn't seen, I've never watched those shows.
You never seen them on New Year's?
No.
Really?
But what's weird is, okay, so these other shows have been on for a while at that time. I went through this weird period from, this is no bullshit, from the age of 14 to like, right before my mom died, probably 20. I just went out every night. I was going to nightclubs and shit. So on the weekends, I wasn't watching TV. You know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I was not watching TV because I was out. And, so I missed a lot of shit.
Well, like
I missed a whole lot of shit, man.
See, it's weird because I miss casual TV. I miss passive TV. Like you put on TV, and it just plays, or you flip channels and something's on or something's not on.
Right.
But something catches your attention and you watch it. With now, you have to be deliberate with, like, streaming. Because even if you're just kind of casually scrolling, you still have to decide on watching something. It's not like something's going to come in mid-episode and try to grab your attention and make you go, like, oh, what's going on?
Right.
You know?
And you can always say, I'll come back and watch this later.
Right.
You know, the way it was before, if you didn't watch it right then, you don't know when you're going to be able to see it again.
Exactly. So, I stopped watching TV... Probably, I'm going to say, in general, when I was about 15, 16 years old.
Right.
It wasn't necessarily because I was going out, but maybe I was reading, I was writing, I was hanging out with friends,
going on.
Doing
yeah.
other stuff, yeah. and then there came a certain point where, you know, it's like I'd sit there and watch TV, and then afterwards, like, I could watch an episode. Like, I could watch a Seinfeld or something and be like, yeah, that was cool. But anything more than that, I just felt like I was wasting time. I wanted to actually
do stuff.
But back then, this would have been like 12, 13 years old. Wonder Years was brand new, and he was my age.
Right, so I was 15 at that time. You know? So at 15, I was just into other shit and everything. So.
But Wonder Years is
I've seen a couple episodes. The ones that I've seen are good. I'm familiar with the show and everything, but it just wasn't something that I watched when I was.
And then China Beach, my parents watched.
Okay.
It was just a drama that was on primetime, whatever. But yeah, dude, that is it for the old business. We'll take a break real quick and come back with the new.
My name is Tarago. I'm a fighter from the Soviet Union. I fight all my life and I never lose. Soon I fight Rocky Balboa and the world will see his defeat. Soon, the whole world will know my name.
All over the place with new business, by the way. We're everywhere with it. Okay, so Mr. Gomez, if you would.
New business is new business, and this is new business.
Alright, so we've already talked about the fact that we now know the passengers on the Titan sub, they're gone. You know, they died pretty quickly into their voyage and everything. So, what's weird is the story died pretty quick.
It's because another one popped up.
It's disappeared together, yeah. But some other stories did come up in between here and there. One of the more outlandish ones that I saw, and I'm sure you saw it also, but this one also died down pretty quick. But two of the world's most high-profile technology billionaires agreed to a cage fight. And I'm sure you saw that Elon Musk challenged Mark Zuckerberg to a cage fight, because Mark Zuckerberg, of course, he's been training in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and mm-hmm. recently had a tournament and stuff. So I have no idea what bug got up Elon's ass to challenge him to a cage fight, but Zuckerberg pretty much accepted it. And the internet went crazy for a couple of days, including Elon Musk's, his mom came out and said the fight is not going to happen. And she literally told someone on Twitter, stop encouraging him. Those were her words. Elon Musk's mom got on Twitter and told some random person, stop encouraging him.
That's awesome.
The dude's in his 50s. And his mom is still right there having to get people to keep him in line. It just, I just found it fucking hilarious.
Dude, yeah, it's... That whole bunch of mess is... It's silly, dude, but it's silly. So people pay attention to it, right. I guess.
Another major story that has come out within the past couple of days, which is interesting, which is scary, is kind of a horror movie related if you look at Outbreak, is recently 5 people have contracted malaria within the U.S. borders, which isn't an odd thing. People end up getting malaria all the time, but these people never traveled outside of the country. So they caught it from mosquitoes that are here in the United States now. So, you know, there's only 5 people so far. It's not too big of a deal right now. But, of course, not to turn us into a conspiracy theory podcast, but there's tons of conspiracy theories going out right now as far as what's going on with this. Just, you know, people trying to put the dots together and everything. And
well, you saw the thing I sent you with Bill Gates, and it's like, yeah. It's like we're at the cutting edge of malaria research and development. And the comment was like, and development? Good. That's not good.
Well, there were recently some bioengineered mosquitoes that were released in different parts of the United States, including Florida, which is where some of the people contracted this disease. And it is actually 3 years ago they were released, or 2 years ago. So this is one to definitely watch to see where it goes. Because malaria is a bad shit. That's not a good thing. That to me, that's scarier than COVID. So
oh, much.
We'll see where that goes. In this week's edition of Nature You Scary. This is some crazy shit, dude. I found this story the other day. I found it like the day after we recorded the last time, and I had to save it immediately. Okay. So this story is about a red-tailed hawk by the name of Tuffy. Okay. So apparently, red-tailed hawks and bald eagles are mortal enemies. If a bald eagle sees a red-tailed hawk, they will fuck them up. Okay. So this has apparently happened a few times before. These bald eagles found a nest of baby red-tailed hawks, snatched 2 of them and brought back to their nest with their baby red-tailed hawks. Ripped one apart and ate them. Okay? In front of his brother, Tuffy has seen some shit. Tuffy was ripped from his nest and forced to watch his brother get eaten by bald eagles. Then the mama bald eagle got confused and is now raising Tuffy as her own. They kidnapped a red-tailed baby hawk, brought him back, made him watch his brother die, and he is now, bird watchers in this sanctuary or in the Bay Area forest in California are literally documenting the process of what's going on right now. He pretty much has Stockholm syndrome. He thinks that that's his parents now, and he's probably scared shitless because he's like, they ate my brother. I ain't saying shit.
I'm gonna eat the worms.
And literally to where he's now at a point now where, you know, and you see this at the conservatory with owls that nest there and hawks. Your baby birds get to a point to where they can't fly real far, but they'll leave the nest and kind of bounce around, you know, 20 feet away from the nest. He's doing that right now and going right back to the nest. He thinks he's a fucking bald eagle now and he's hanging out with them. But it's just crazy. These bald eagles kidnap some babies.
Maybe they're creating a Terminator. You send it in to infiltrate. Dude. So there was a video I saw. It's like Nature Is Lit or something on Instagram.
Uh-huh.
And it's like these peregrine falcons fly into a chicken coop. And there's all these baby chicks. Like just kind of beep, 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 beep. And these 2 falcons just bust into this little
buffet.
Dude, they eat them. They eat them all. Fucking like, buffet. They don't like falcon beaks are sharp.
Oh yeah,
you know, like they don't chew them up. They like pop them in there like they're taking pills.
Yeah,
you're just like, but like the bird, the bird that is eating eats more than its own mass in baby bird, because there's like 20 chicks in this little coop, and a bird goes in there and he's not that big.
They're not very big at all.
But he eats up all of the birds and his stomach's all distended and it's like
he's kind of wobbling out. Yeah. Doing a side to side shuffle.
Crazy stuff, man.
Okay, now we're gonna talk about a couple of dumb criminals. So Amber Barone out of Indianapolis was walking over to her mailbox one day. Next thing you know, she was robbed at gunpoint by a gentleman. She was grabbing her mail. Guy took his hand out of his pocket and showed her a gun. Wanted to get into the house. Stole about $100 worth of cash from her. Took off. Next thing you know, dude jumped in her DMs on Facebook and said, you know, I shouldn't have robbed you. I'm sorry. You think you might want to go out sometimes? The dude literally invited her out after robbing her at gunpoint of $100. Some people. So they're going to say he was quickly arrested because he pretty much admitted to everything. And
yeah, on the thing.
He'll I'm not sure if he'll be going to jail, but he'll definitely be getting in trouble. This is my favorite story right here. And it's fallen in Pride Month, which is awesome. And you'll see why that might be kind of hilarious. 19-year-old Minnesotan Tristan Statina. Dude's already starting off with kind of a weird name. Okay. The upside down cross and broken heart facial tattoos on his cheeks and the Uzi machine gun tattoo on his forehead ain't helping this dude at all. Okay. So, what was Mr. Tristan Statina in trouble for? Okay, so he was charged with misdemeanor assault for walking into a restaurant in Mankata Eatery where he began throwing Skittles at the employees and restaurant patrons. Not bags of Skittles, individual Skittles. Now, what I'm hoping is this dude was yelling at the time, "Taste the rainbow, right, motherfucker," or something to make it even harder than it was. But victim one said she was hit in the back with a Skittle, which caused a stinging pain. Basically, he was chunking these things like paintball bullets and just tearing everybody up with Skittles. In the report, the cops say they arrived on location and saw Skittles all over the ground. I don't know how many Skittles this guy threw, but he, as soon as they described Tristan with his broken heart tattoo and upside down cross, the police immediately knew who he was because they were familiar with Tristan Statina.
I gotta say, that might have been premeditated because during Pride Month, Skittles comes out with like colorless Skittles.
Yeah.
So he couldn't be tasting the rainbow. He'd be throwing them, they'd look like little pebbles.
So they located him at a nearby business where he tried to get away from the officers, but if you'd see a picture of this dude, he was very easily subdued. I'll show you a picture of good old Tristan. Tristan did not put up much of a fight, needless to say.
Wow.
Yeah. So the Skittle assault guy, Mr. Tristan Statina, is our dumb criminal. Do you see the Uzi tattoo on the forehead?
Yes. Yeah. The thing is, he looks like a little kid.
He looks like a kid.
He looks like suburban.
Well, he's 19 years old, but he looks 14.
Yeah,
you know,
he looks
like... So, not sure. nothing is saying whether or not he was on any kind of drugs or anything at the time, but he was arrested. And, of course, I see that you have brought it out, so I'm assuming we're going to talk about the sad news that we had yesterday.
Well, and he's been missing since January, so you yes. kind of knew, but you, I mean, again, as long as there's hope, you know, that maybe he just...
Wandered off.
Maybe he wandered off.
Kidnapped.
Maybe,
you know?
he's got dementia, and they were going to find him, you know, at a homeless shelter or something,
right.
But this week we got confirmation. Some hikers found the body of actor Julian Sands, who he's got a long and very successful career, but for our show, I don't think there. I mean, the movie Warlock is pretty much unmatched. There's not another movie that's like it. That's as good as it is.
That movie came out when I worked in the movie theater, too. So I saw it many, many times.
I mean, he embodied that character so well. It was extremely memorable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we talk about movies a lot, and we'll sit there, if we don't have our notes, be like, oh, who was that? Who was that? And, you know, was it? No, when it comes to Julian Sands, you're like, Warlock. You know, yeah. I mean, they're...
Well, with me, also Arachnophobia, one of my favorite animal horror movies, mm-hmm. you know, made, just because of how well made that movie was. He wasn't in it a lot, but his character definitely stood out.
And, you know, he's an accomplished hiker, he's an outdoors person, nature lover, completely unlike his character in Warlock, which, of course, was, you know, from back in the day.
Right.
But, no, we have to pour one out in remembrance of Mr. Sands, because...
He was at Texas Frightmare last year.
It's...
So he was still very active in everything.
Yeah.
You know?
I think he was working. I think he was either on a movie or he was signed on to do something, but unfortunately he's crossed the rainbow bridge, so there's one for Mr. Sands. And then, you know, to dovetail into the episode, here's some new business. Hey, guess what? Russia's in crisis. I don't know, were you paying attention to any of that? Were you following that at all?
Yeah, the initial quote-unquote rebellion that fizzled out. 120 miles away from Moscow, all of a sudden everything just shut down. It was weird. It was really fucking weird the way it happened.
It is. And, you know, because I'm sitting here watching it, I mean, you might as well just had a popcorn emoji, because I'm sitting here watching it being like, wow, this is nuts. On the one hand, geopolitical intrigue is extremely complicated, and it's not something we talk about on the Scary Dad podcast or whatever, but Russia is actively at war with another country right now, and the primary army fighting that other country on Russia's behalf turned around and went the other way.
Yeah. Said, so, wait, what are we doing?
So basically,
your guard dog turned on you.
Yeah. And it was like, okay, well, we're going to, instead of fighting Ukraine, we're going to turn around and take Moscow. And for a minute there, it looked like they were going to. And I'm going, well, dude, because it's just happening in real time. My wife's like, well, you know, Putin's a bad guy. I was like, Putin may be a bad guy, but a scared Putin's worse. Like a Putin with something to lose,
right?
He's got all those buttons to push,
right?
But
what was weird about
what the hell is going on?
So when I was at work when it was going down, okay, and to this day, and judge me if you want, I don't care. I use a news aggregate website to get my news stories. I don't go to a specific news story.
Yeah,
I use the Drudge Report. I've been going to the Drudge Report since I was for fucking 20 something years now. And Matt Drudge. R.I.P. The Drudge Report kind of gathers everything and...
Cascades it,
and, you know, as stuff comes out, he puts it at the top. And, you know, he does the different headlines. And, you know, I checked it out that morning, checked it out again, like, you know, later on that day. And then all of a sudden, there's all these red headline splashes about a rebellion happening in Russia. And I was like, the fuck's going on? And you'd swear it'd been going on for a week.
Yeah.
And it was like... 6 hours or some shit. It was nuts, man.
Well, the thing that was bizarre to me is that you went from, I guess, globally, for and we'll talk about it after the segment, you know, but Russia has always been this monolith, this just unbreakable empire.
Yeah.
You know? Now you knew, like the Soviet Union, because of its economics and its politics, that it was just simply unsustainable in its form. But that didn't mean that, like, you know, governments fall. But what happens is a government, people always screw up and they think of a government as some kind of an entity outside of just a collective of people.
Right.
And, like, when the Soviet Union fell, the reason that it was so anticlimactic, considering how powerful the Soviet Union actually was because, basically, you had militaries all over the world. You had Russian troops in different areas, all kind of getting a postcard being like, we're out of money, you're not getting paid, go home. And so they didn't have, like, okay, we do, like, we're not getting paid, we're like, okay, we're
done with you,
we're
yeah.
We're going to go home. Now, people died, and people suffered, and I'm not trying to make light of it, but on a grand scale, that's essentially what happened.
Right.
And then, you know, the Russian Federation came up, and you've got all that, you know, it rebuilt, but it was never, it rebuilt, it was never really gone. It just reorganized.
Yep.
When you have some mad, screaming, yelling dude with an AK-47 being like, get out of my way or I'm going to kill you, I'm marching on Moscow, and he gets within a couple hundred yards.
That was crazy, dude.
You're going, the hell is going on over there? So,
because, like, you and I grew, do you want to take a break before we get
into it? Yeah, we'll finish the old, this was
new business. I'm done with the new business. I'm done with the new business.
This is new business. This is going to segue us into the next one. So we'll take a break and talk about this more in just a minute.
This is the emergency broadcast system. We are under attack by conventional forces of the Russian army. It is believed the lead waves were disguised as commercial charter flights. Communications have broken down with other parts of the country. Large areas of the Midwest may have been overrun.
Who all of you are, they're looking for you.
You're 40 miles behind enemy lines.
I just want to go home.
They took a lot of people away.
Where's my dad, Mr. Eckert?
I want to love somebody, Andy. I'm going to die before it happens.
Just... They're going to kill us. All of us!
So why should we be different?
Because we live here!
Not bad for a bunch of kids, huh?
Mama'd be real proud.
We're back.
Yes, we are.
All right. So that was a kind of a forced break from the new business to the old business, which continually renews itself because the crazy crap going on in Russia, right after the crazy crap that was going on in the Atlantic,
stirring up some memories.
Yeah. I mean, come on, dude. Like, remember LimeWire? Where you can download all your free music and stuff?
Yep.
I downloaded, and this was like 15 years ago, because LimeWire no longer exists. But in that torrent stream where you can just grab anything you want, I pulled the Soviet National Anthem. And at the time, Meg was sitting next to me, she's like, why would you do that? And I pressed play, and it's like, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. It's like, because that tune scared the fuck out of me when I was a kid. Like, that's what was playing through those little speakers in Red Dawn.
Yeah.
You know? Like, my entire life. Now, we got the good side of things, because we were only, like, scared by propaganda and media and stuff. We weren't actually, like, shot at.
Yeah.
But the specter of the giant red Soviet and Russian bear.
Well, the idea of Red Dawn itself is essentially what just happened in Russia with the rebellion they had. You know, we grew up, you know, fearing the Red Curtain, you mm-hmm. know, and fearing, and War Games gave us a tremendous fear of nuclear weapons. I mean, to me, War Games is the movie that really had me scared, because they were freaking the fuck out. They were in a bunker underground and just waiting for absolute annihilation from Russia. And then Red Dawn came out and basically showed us what would happen if it was on our soil. You know, mm-hmm. we grew up with wars. We grew up with wars happening all over the place, but nothing here in our backyard.
Right.
And Red Dawn was like, that'd be really fucked up if that would happen.
Right. So let's, I mean, again, like I said in an earlier segment, it's not a matter of getting into politics or anything, but, you know, I remember my grandfather who fought in World War One, or not World War One, World War Two, but he was on the Japanese, on the Pacific Theater, would say that they should have gone ahead after they finished with Berlin, they should have marched to Moscow because it wasn't that far away. And that used to that phrase used to horrify me because I was like, man, you just came off a war where millions and millions of people were dying, and you want to just keep going? You want to just keep right. moving? And his his response was, and this was like, I was a little kid, so I didn't really understand it, but then the words kind of stick in my head. He's like, you had a pre-nuclear Soviet Union that was on the ropes from fighting with Germany. It wouldn't have taken a whole lot more to just push them over.
Mm-hmm.
And they were exhausted, and America was still in the fight. And I was like, okay, well, to me that sounds stupid. It sounds like a whole bunch of loss of life and whatnot and so forth. But then we started having these movies coming out, like Red Dawn.
Yep.
And showing this just giant, like, monolithic Iron Curtain. That's what it yep. was. You didn't know what was happening on the other side. And what all you saw in our media was that it was just like all of these super trained supermen and old babushkas. There was never any depiction of pretty Russian women anywhere until the 90s, right?
Right.
But, like, our media built it up to be absolutely frightening. I'm sure, you know, it's somewhere in the middle. I mean, there's been lots of people on both sides that are afraid of something, and probably with good reason. But Russia, as a specter of history, has always been terrifying.
Well, look at Rocky IV.
Yeah. Well, no, those are some stuff on my list.
There's a big super soldier Russian, which, you know, and they made it so fucking evil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was this huge guy that used illegal training methods and illegal drugs to make this super soldier. Motherfucker killed Apollo Creed, who was a beloved character in the Rocky franchise. Mm-hmm. It made you hate Russia. It was so, you know, the Cold War was fought on many different fronts, and a big part of it was media and Hollywood.
Yeah, hearts and minds.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, you know, we start back at, well, you before we got started, and so this would predate all of these movies. So, what was the factoids on a certain giant monster?
Yeah, so, you know, immediately following World War II, because of the way World War II ended, with the introduction of the atomic bomb. You know, the nuclear weapons all of a sudden were in the mix. It scared the shit out of a lot of people. And one of the peoples that were the biggest victims of that was, of course, Japan. You know, how many other actual victims of atomic weapons, you know, physically, not just the propaganda side, Japan. Is it?
It's the only one. It's the only place.
And you know, so Japan, I'm not saying they wanted sympathy, but they wanted people to hear their story. So in 1954 was the beginning of the Guinness Book of World Records, the longest movie franchise in history is Godzilla. And, you know, what's interesting is just kind of looking at this through researching it for this particular episode, I always knew what Godzilla represented. You know, it represented the United States military. You know, Godzilla was formed by nuclear war. Godzilla attacked Japan. Godzilla was this horrible thing that, you know, that was caused by our actions. Now, if you watch the Americanized version, Raymond Burr, of course, was in that 1954 Godzilla. On Shout TV, they have all the Criterion versions of Godzilla. The unedited, subtitled, not dubbed, you know, full original versions of every Godzilla movie on Shout TV streaming for free. So I'm letting you know that. Me and my son have already watched all of them. So it really gives you an idea of what the Japanese are trying to do with the Godzilla movies. And the social commentary that comes out of this stuff is amazing. I found a 100-plus page thesis written on this exact subject of Godzilla and social commentary regarding the Cold War, specifically. So when you look at the original Godzilla, like I said, it's created by American nuclear weapons. It destroys Japanese cities. The film was made about 9 years after the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. 7 years after U.S. troops established dominance over the islands, and Article 9 of the Japanese Constitution, which was the No Armed Forces Clause, was written, is when Godzilla came out. And it kind of like gave the world an idea of, you know, for people that actually looked at it and kind of looked for the meaning behind it of what was going on. And Godzilla movies continued. And as the Cold War progressed, you know, the second movie was in 55, and I think it was Godzilla Returns or some shit like that. And then you started having the Godzilla versus films, which those are the ones that I never really looked at as far as what the social commentary was on them. The only one that I really knew is Hedorah, which is the Smog Monster, which is my favorite Godzilla movie of all time, which I knew that one was commentary on pollution specifically, because that's how Hedorah was formed, was from pollution. And it got energy from smog. You know, it was obvious what that was, but sort of looking. And, for example, Mothra. Okay, Mothra was one of the first villains, but eventually became a good guy after 1965, which was the Treaty of Basic Relations between Japan and South Korea. So there are people that believe that Mothra represents South Korea, because all of a sudden it started helping. You know, it wasn't Godzilla. It couldn't do everything by itself.
It needed some help.
And of course, once the Japan-American Security Alliance happened, all of a sudden Godzilla went from being an enemy of Japan to who Japan would call on whenever all the versus battles happened. And it's just so crazy how this connection is. Rodan, which was a flying, it was a pterodactyl, I remember that one. It debuted around the same time the Soviet Union started showing aggression over the Kuril Islands, when Russia was using the flybys over those islands to threaten them. And all of a sudden you have a flying monster named Rodan, who the United States has to come and help them out with. It's just crazy how this happened. The arrival of Hedorah, which is the three-headed monster, it just so happened to coincide with China's development of nuclear weapons. And they're packed with two other communist countries in Asia, North Korea and North Vietnam. Both of them started like getting more aggressive towards Japan. And next thing you know, you have a three-headed beast that comes up. And the United States, of course, once again, has to step into it. You know, it's amazing to me how they were able, they put that in there. Like all this stuff. Because, you know, growing up, I just watched the movies. I thought it was cool. It was kaiju, you know, monsters fighting each other.
Yeah.
It was fucking awesome. But just looking at it, you know, Japan has been on the forefront of, you know, kind of, you know, that was up to 1974, I think. They were there letting people know, this is what's happening, you know? These are bad things. We need to make sure that we keep stopping these bad people. And that's where it kind of first starts. All the bad guys represented the communist countries and the countries that were threatening with nuclear weapons.
Insane. I never saw it like that, but once you pointed out, I'm like, well, that makes total sense. And yeah, it's crazy, like, coming off of the, you know, out of the ashes of World War II, because if you know, so there's right over your shoulder on that bookshelf, there is a story my grandfather wrote. My grandfather was a Marine in 1945, and he was in Japan at the tail end of the war. And he came into contact. The stuff that's in his account of his experience in the war is scarier than any of the movies we ever talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Harrowing, horrifying, absolute, pure evil. And without getting too deeply into it, basically he and his crew were sent on a recon mission and they got cut off and trapped. And the Japanese knew that they were there and were looking for them. And as they were going through, they were started killing villagers because they thought they were being hidden, which they were. But you have all these GIs kind of hiding out in the basement, watching through like vents, you know, bamboo vents under the house, watching these people being tortured and realizing that we're not going to get out of here. They're eventually going to find us. So instead of sitting here waiting around to die, we'll just go on the offensive. So what they started doing was sneaking out at night and killing sentries and like going Jason Voorhees on the Japanese. He carried a bullet in his back his whole life. He had no love for anything Asian at all.
Right.
Like I'd be surprised if he ate Asian food. But that said, They were ruthless and they were brutal. But then after the war, they changed to a economic and artistic powerhouse, mm-hmm. as opposed to a military one. So they've got a lot rooted in their art that speaks a lot to their history and their passions. And it was a bad day to them when the communists took over China, because they've never been friends. That was bad news. But switching to a different thing altogether. You know, we're talking about movies. You know, we talk again about slashers or monsters or whatever. I have to say that growing up, Red Dawn was probably one of the scariest movies that I ever watched. Because I was young. I was, you know.
It was frightening.
But I was the age of the kids that were in
me too.
In that school me when too. They shelled it. You know? Bunch of paratroopers just land on the
ground. Yeah, they're just sitting in class and playground. They see the things coming down. Yeah.
Teacher walks out to see what's going on. And they just machine gun him. And they just machine gun the school. And everybody's just running in chaos and craziness. I wasn't high school age, but I was, you know, not far behind. And, you know, the fact that they have to just tear off and run into the woods. They don't know what happened.
Don't know where their parents are. Yeah, you know, they don't know anything.
And that's the whole rest of the story. You know, is you just got your it's occupation and they're guerrilla warriors. And you think about, it's like, oh, okay, you know, it's like you got places where there's guerrilla warfare. So like South America or in the Middle East or wherever it may be. And you're like, oh, what motivates these people? Either the death of or not knowing what ended up happening to their families.
Mm-hmm.
They're just in hiding and they take pot shots where they can and hope to survive the night. And,
right.
You know, and you don't look at it, you look at it from an over there perspective. It's over there. It's happening to other people. You don't think about it happening to you.
Here. Right.
And Red Dawn woke that up. And woke that up by using a cast of not unknown actors. They weren't superstars, but they were well enough to know that they could have been your brother, your cousin, your brother-in-law, that guy. You knew him well enough that you cared. And Red Dawn, to this day, scares the shit out of me.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, I remember thinking back when I first saw it when I was a kid, thinking, what would I do in that situation?
You piss in the radiator is what you do.
Because it's just a scary thought. And your life totally changes. You know, everything you know changes. You know, it's... Like I said, you don't think about it being here, and that kind of brought it to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because all the effectiveness of actually using the Russian troops were pretty much the same age.
Yeah.
So they're like young guys, and they're clean, and they're personable, and they're just out taking pictures of stuff.
They're much better equipped, though. They were much better equipped.
Well, I'm talking about that scene, like that first scene where they decide to strike back.
Yeah.
So they're up on the mountains, and he like lays a couple arrows out, and the Russians are like taking pictures of like the overlook, and they find the arrow. It's like, oh, this must have been, you know, Native American or whatever, and then they ambush them, and they're all just young, you know, conscripted guys. They're not, you know, specifically evil. They're just on the wrong side of things. And then when Patrick Swayze like executes that guy in the Jeep,
right?
It's like, what's the difference between them and us? He's like, we fucking live here. And then just having that on your conscience as well, because all those, all their souls get completely eroded as they're fighting. Like, they're, at first they're all like horrified, and later on they're just blowing people up left and right because fuck them.
Right.
It's, I mean, it's, I mean, I think that's one of those movies that's kind of like a perfect film. It just like, it takes a whole lot of nuance, and it doesn't try to over-explain it. It just shows it to you, and it's not good.
Right.
And then you mentioned War Games.
War Games, that's what I was going to go to next. War Games was another one that brought the tension home as far as, you know, they don't have to come here to cause mayhem. Because when you look at the tension that's caused in that film and the fear that those guys had, you know, that was the military and they were freaking out like that. Should I be freaking the fuck out? You know, I don't have a bunker I could jump into like them. You know, what could happen with us? War Games is a great movie. You know, it, but it made you, it instilled that fear of specifically Russia. I mean, everything was just so specific to Russia. It wasn't made up countries. You know, it wasn't you know, it wasn't movies where they were just, it was fantasy. They were making it so realistic.
Right.
It made you have a serious fear of a specific thing. You know, it was, the shit could really happen. You know, and I almost wonder if one of the reasons we got kind of tainted is that all these Hollywood movies that started showing us fear and things that could happen, every one of them had kind of a happy ending.
Well, we won.
So you started thinking, yeah, it could be bad, but they'll take care of everything. Did that kind of like make us not take it as seriously as we should?
I think it was more propaganda, because I always used to, I mean, I did definitely, and no lie, I had this conversation with my dad. I had this conversation with my own dad. Like, it bought, like, the whole Cold War, the whole Russian situation bothered the shit out of me, because I understood war between armies. Mm-hmm. You line your guys up, and I'll line my guys up, and let them shoot it out, and whoever's left standing wins the battle, right? Blowing up cities full of civilians made no sense. It was just pure madness. It made absolutely no sense. Because from a strategic point of view, oh, we need to take that hill because it gives us the high ground. So strategically, we need to take the hill. Or, even up to and including, the other guys are on the hill, we need to blow up the hill. We don't need to take it. We just need to make those guys not there anymore. But when it comes to cities and population centers and that sort of a thing, I didn't do anything to you. What the fuck are you trying to blow me up?
Right.
You know, like, I got no beef. We might even have things in common. Like, and I'm a little kid trying to figure this out, because, you know, you have your playground wars too. It's like, I didn't do shit. And my dad was like, well, they, you know, the Russian government starved half their people to death. They don't give a shit about anything. Right. Like, that can't possibly be true. Well, as it turns out, there's some pretty fucked up people in the world who are willing to do, to win by any means necessary.
Yeah.
If it means blowing up a city, they'll do it.
They'll do it.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that all of the good guys are on our side either, because they're willing to blow up some shit on the other side of place,
right,
to make sure that, you know. But the whole concept, like, oh, well, we'll just lob a chunk of the sun over there and just...
Even though I know you're going to retaliate with us and do the same thing to us, I'm going to cut off my nose to spite my face.
Yeah, just so I can say I got you first.
Yeah.
Just absolute madness.
Yeah.
And then these are the people who are in charge of us. Like, just doesn't seem right. And you would have thought cooler heads would prevail and the next generation would come along. But they're just as... Like, we are talking about this now because those fuckers are talking about it still.
Right.
Like, it's...
It's still a thing.
Yeah.
And then you had... Now, in the middle of the Cold War thing, you also had Levity. And I don't know if you remember, but SNL decided to get in the game with Spies Like Us. I'm sure you remember Spies Like Us.
Oh, yeah.
Which was an interesting movie because all of a sudden... The villain wasn't actually the Russians. The villain was weapons manufacturers. They were the ones that, in order to increase their sales, wanted to go ahead and lob a damn nuclear weapon in the United States, thinking, we'll prove to them that we could take it out. That way they'll buy our system. Mm-hmm. It was just a fucked up movie.
Well, it's a messed up premise. I don't think it's that far off. I mean,
right? Oh yeah, I can promise you.
What is it? The same thing. Sherlock Holmes, the mm-hmm. Robert Downey Jr. version, where they're in like pre World War I. It's like got all of these warehouses full of all these massive artillery. Like, well, what are you going to use this on? Like, oh, well, this guy's moving chess pieces around so that everybody will get pissed and buy all the guns.
Right.
So he can make a lot of money. It's got nothing to do with where those guns are going to point or what's going to...
I'm not worried about any of that.
No, just make a lot of money. And, yeah. You know. And that's still going on. But Spies Like Us did the same thing just from a, you know, Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd perspective.
Well, one of the reasons I bring up that movie, of course, because Ted Raimi has a cameo in that movie. Little known fact, Ted Raimi is a security guard at the drive-in theater in Spies Like Us. If you blink, you will miss him. But he is in that movie. Where do you want to go next?
I was going to say, talk about Ted Raimi and cameos. Between him and that yellow Oldsmobile... Because the girls just started watching Spider-Man uh-huh. 2 and stuff, and you're just like, once you notice, you're just like, man, they're everywhere. And then you mentioned Rocky IV.
Yes.
And Rocky IV is another one of those that...
That was a big one. That was a big one that set in with the propaganda.
I think, yeah, I'm going to say that the entire... I mean, although it's certainly better than 3... I mean, while I love Mr. T, Rocky IV, there's so much more at stake. It's you know, but just, I mean, can we just take a second to appreciate how awesome Dolph Lundgren is? I mean,
he was a monster, dude. It's fucking scary, dude.
So cool. I mean, he was terrifying, and he's just a big blonde guy. Man,
no emotion at all.
Mm-mm. If he dies, he dies.
Yeah,
just
break him. Yeah. No, Apollo Creed goes to like slap gloves, and the dude doesn't move.
Yeah, his hands like bam. He's like bop. It's like hitting a table. Just like ugh. And Apollo's like in an exhibition
match.
Like,
he's having fun. You know, he's goofing off with it and everything. He's thinking that it's not that serious, and the Russians were evil. Quote unquote, you know, that's just what we were taught.
Beat the guy to death, just punch after punch after punch. Just, there's no stopping that fight. He just crushed him. But then,
throw the damn towel!
Mm-hmm. Then Rocky's like working out in the mountains, lifting freaking horse carts,
jogging through the snow with the Russian, the Kremlin following him around.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
He gets high enough up that mountain that they can't follow him anymore, and their car skids out, remember? He's all like, this is such a great movie. I mean, but when you think about the cheese factor and the propaganda side of things, true story, man, whenever that movie came out, Church's Chicken had a promo where you could get a I think it was a t-shirt. I'm pretty sure it was a t-shirt. If you bought like a 12-piece chicken biscuit thing or a bucket or whatever, you could get a Rocky IV t-shirt with the gloves, like smacking. And my cousin and I, God, you're going to laugh. We trained to go see this movie. We trained. We ran. We boxed. We did push-ups. We trained to be ready to go see Rocky IV in the theater. Like, I did frickin' push-ups in order to be worthy of going to see Rocky IV. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to get our parents to take us to go get the Church's Chicken box so we could get our t-shirt. But when we went, they were sold out. It was disappointing as shit. And not too long ago, I actually looked up that Church's Chicken t-shirt on frickin' eBay, and they were selling them for like $170. See if you can look it up right now. You're online. See if you can find the Church's Chicken Rocky IV t-shirt. See what those things are going for, because a couple of years ago, they were freaking out there. I thought maybe I'd buy myself a vintage, extra large, you know, fat guy Rocky IV t-shirt.
There's a bunch of them out there. I'm trying to find one on eBay.
Just find one in any kind of condition, because there were some messed up ones. I'm talking about one that was like, you know. But yeah, I trained to go see Rocky IV in the theater. Good movie. Still scared shitless of. Well, then you sent me the video about Metallica playing in front of 1.6 million people at that festival in 1989.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that was crazy, wasn't it,
dude? How do you even get 1.6 million people into an area? Like, it was just this massive wave of humanity. It's just insane. But yeah, when the glasnost and perestroika started happening, and they started getting a taste of Western culture, they preferred Rocky to Ivan. And so then we had a little bit of a break from the Iron Curtain. The Iron Curtain came down. Then the Russian Federation came up. We found out that Russian girls were hot. I guess things have been going all right for a while.
There was movies that softened it up a lot. A whole lot. Things got better, and then now look at where we're at now. You know, we're at the place we were before.
Well, maybe not even, because at least with Soviet Union, it was top-down control. You didn't have rogue billionaires with private armies.
Well, that's what we were talking about the other day. Yeah, you're not just worried about one specific military anymore.
But you know what it made me think of when I was reading about this whole Wagner group thing? That was how Rome worked. Like, back in the day. Like, ancient Rome. So, the Roman government didn't have money. There was they were public works, but they didn't have, like, standing armies. What you had was all of your senators and all of your bureaucrats, all of your higher up, they were essentially just very, very wealthy individuals that had private armies that worked for them.
Uh-huh.
And so if you wanted to go into battle and you wanted to go take some land, you wanted to go, oh, we're going to go over here into what, you know, what's a fucking, you know, they'd go, they'd fight, they'd win. And then they'd sack a city or whatever, multiple cities, and they'd come back with all this treasure, and the Roman city would pay tribute. They'd have a big parade, and so you'd have this billionaire guy walking in his armor through the middle of town, and he'd have his army behind him, and they were getting, like, you know, laurel wreaths and flowers and stuff. Hey, when Roman Empire began to collapse, like Julius Caesar, that's exactly what happened. Was Julius Caesar was one of those guys. Uh-huh. He was just extra popular. But Mark Antony was also one of those guys.
Right.
And those other guys, Brutus, he was one of those guys. They all had their armies, and so they're all individualized, and loyalty came from cash.
Right.
And influence and what you could do. It didn't really come from, like, our army is
any falling. Feeling of patriotic duty or
yeah.
anything.
Yeah. And they weren't loyal to Rome as an ideal. They were loyal to Bob over here because right. he had the checkbook.
Right.
And that's what happened in Russia, and it's just like, oh, we've got all these oligarchs with all these private armies that are doing these things for pay. They're mercenaries. But how do you control mercenaries? Like in fucking The Rock with Nicolas Cage. It's right. like, sir, we don't follow you. We don't follow orders. We're mercenaries. When Ed Harris loses control yeah. of yeah. his mercs.
Like, oh. Well, the thing about it is, what's to stop the next group saying, hey, they got within under 20 miles. Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and knock this shit out real quick. Or two of them saying, hey, let's get together.
Let's just be quiet and take care of this filter shit. Back into yeah. the city and cause some trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's all kinds of crazy. And then,
because it's shown some serious vulnerabilities. Nothing like this has happened
mm-hmm.
in a really, really long fucking time. You know, invading Ukraine is one thing. Invading a superpower like Russia is a totally different fucking thing.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big fucking deal. You know, it's scary. I mean, what's to stop from somebody, we don't know, somebody setting up shit right now in Cuba.
Yeah.
Getting ready to jump across and come jump over here. You know, it's a wild thought, man. It's like I've always told you, the shit that scares me the most is the shit that can really happen.
Yeah. And to finish it, to close it out, because there was that nice little meme that showed the Hunter Biden webcam picture of him with the cigarette in his mouth, and it slowly morphed to the Titan sub, because that was the news a couple of days ago.
Uh-huh.
Is Donald Trump was indicted on
espionage
because of his classified documents, but Hunter Biden was also indicted because...
Well, he wasn't just indicted, he took a plea, so his shit is over with.
Well, no, he took a plea, yeah. but he was being investigated, and what the investigation was that he forced a $5 million payment from that Ukrainian oil company.
I thought it was just the gun and the tax charges, but they haven't investigated the $5 million yet.
That's being investigated,
yeah.
but it's on top of all these other things.
Yeah.
The long and the short is, he's not a good guy, and his dad is the president.
Right.
And if $5 million changed hands on behalf of a sitting vice president, who is now the president, that means the president's compromised via Ukraine, which is what the Russians have been screaming since before they attacked.
Right.
It's like, there's corruption in there, yada, yada, yada. And now we're watching all this shit happen, and it's like, I can't do anything about it, so I'm just going to keep watching cartoons and drinking beer. But it is fucking scary.
Right. Well, the thing about it is, like, you know, just full disclosure, if I was president, okay, let's say somehow people forget about my past and I become president of the United States, and you call me up and say, hey, dude, check it out. I didn't claim some shit on my taxes, and there's a video out there of me high, smoking weed with a gun. I'd be like, I got you. Don't worry. I would do the same shit. You know, I would do it for you. I would do it for my son. It's a weird thing. If I was president, I'd fucking take care of my people.
Well, the thing is, what's funny is Donald Trump is freaking orange comic clown. But he is also, because when he's talking about the fact that he's got classified documents on his person...
Shaking them. There's literally sounds of papers going.
He's like,
see this right here?
He knew for a fact that he was able to pardon himself. He's like, yeah, you know, like they give me this shit and I have to look through it and it's crazy that it's here. He's kind of astounded by the fact that it's there to begin with, but he didn't like pick it up and bring it himself.
Right.
Like other people were like, here, bro, look at this. And I'm wondering if that's what they do to a lot of them, because Biden had them too.
But the thing about it is...
The thing is, a lot of these guys have shit, that I think sometimes... See you Thursday, Bob. Take a look at that on your way out.
Right.
And then they can write it down and be like, oh, that dude's in possession of classified documents outside the security clearance doors. Write that shit down. And we can get him.
But the thing about it is...
And I guarantee you that that whole Epstein Island thing, that was it. They took all these fuckers out there. They got them lubed up. They got them all happy with drugs and chicks. And then they got home, and then they rolled tape. Like, all right, guys.
But the thing about
you're on our team now.
The thing about it is, and I honestly think this, if the first time they said, hey, bro, we need those documents back, if he would have gave them back right there, we wouldn't hear another thing about it.
Probably.
And I honestly think that he wasn't keeping them around for any nefarious reasons. He was just like, I'll get to this shit later. I'm not worried about that. I got other things going on. I got dinner to go to tonight.
Yeah.
And things just... And he was like... He was just dismissive of it. And I honestly think if you would have like said here, we'd never hear another thing about it.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. And we mentioned because he was president for the whole time we've been doing the podcast.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about Donald Trump because...
Well, you know why I don't like him.
Well, no. Yeah. No, I don't like him either. Nobody likes him that I know of. It's not a matter of liking or disliking. It's a matter of looking, like you say. It's like, but he should be smart enough to know. He's media savvy enough to be able to just go onto Twitter without logging in, but just looking and being like, man, there's a shitload of people that would love to see me burn. So therefore, I should probably be more careful.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna be just like that extra little bit of careful about what I say and do and think, and oh shit, I think this box isn't supposed to be here. Hey Jeeves, will you please take this box
back? Yeah, get rid of this shit for me.
Just roll it back in there, check it in, you know, if they need a signature, you know, let me know. But he doesn't. He's like, oh, everybody's out to get me. It's like, well, if you're sitting there with shit on your hands, wipe it off, bro.
Or have people in your circle.
Be smart.
Or have people in your circle that take care of that shit. Yeah. That say, hey, don't forget, we need to get rid of this shit. We need to bring it back.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of a bunch of yes men that are scared of you.
Yeah.
You know, and just let you do whatever the fuck you want to do. It's like, you got to be smarter than that.
Yeah, that's the, I mean, and he's not the president anymore, and I don't care. I always thought he was a good source of comedy. I found it was odd that he's just like, you're on TV all the time. You know how this works. Oh, we do crazy shit for ratings. He's like, oh. He's like, oh, here's some crazy shit. He's like, no. I must tell you. He's like, you just go on TV. I'm like, dude, I've been running this cycle for the last 40 years. I've been on TV. I know how it works. They're full of shit. You want to know the truth? Here's what happened. That's all you got to do, man. That's all you got to do. No. You're an idiot, and so are you. It's like, nah, dude, you're done. You're fucking done. Hopefully, they can find somebody better than either one of them. Right now, I'm sure Joe Biden's a robot. He reminds me of the robots in Halloween 3.
Well, we were talking about South Park earlier, and one of my favorite South Park episodes ever was with I can't remember the names that were running, but basically they did a parody of the presidential election with the student class election, and your choices were a douche and a shit sandwich.
Yeah.
Which one do you pick?
We don't know.
That's your choices, a douche or a shit sandwich. Take which one you want.
Well, let's hope that this summer continues to... I would say let's keep it not topical, but let's keep it topical because we don't even really have to think that hard. We just have shit to talk about because the world
is... Doing it just like South Park does.
The world just kind of keeps unfolding in weird ways. But this has been episode 181. Jesus. It is... Tomorrow is July 4th. Excuse me. Please drink lots and lots of beer. It's what George Washington and Benjamin Franklin would have wanted you to do. Be careful. Do not take a PVC tube and cap it at one end and throw a bottle rocket in the other and light it and fire it into a fireworks stand. That would be bad. That's why they say don't do that.
If you use mortar shells, make sure you use the proper size pipe for the mortar shell. Otherwise, it will not go up in the air, and you will have an issue.
You see that video? Those guys are like firing the mortar shell, and it goes off, and it flies into the apartment across the street.
Yes.
So good. Yes, and don't do those things I just told you to not do. That was not suggestion.
Do not throw mortar shells in the sewer in front of your house to listen to the huge echo that it causes whenever it explodes in the sewer.
Do not throw a Molotov cocktail at the entrance to a drainage tube where a whole bunch of kids usually skateboard and then hear them go, "Hey!" from the inside of the tube because they were in there smoking weed.
Do not mix styrofoam and gasoline to make a gel that is similar to napalm to see how long it'll burn for.
Don't do that.
Do not. Take electrical tape and wrap 50 sparklers together with a fuse at the end to see what kind of bomb that it's going to end up making. It is,
that's not good.
You will not have a good time.
Don't do that. You remember those sparkler matches you used to be able to get from like festivals?
Yeah.
And they'd be like pop, 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 pop. We used to stick those in the end of the Daisy Red Rider BB. Well, we had to pump it a couple times and fire it, and it would like across the wall. You can do that all you want. If you hit somebody with it, it's just gonna poke them a little bit.
There's just so much dangerous shit.
Yeah. God. All right, we're gonna have to go before this gets bad. We'll see you next week, guys.
Later. Thank you.